Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallum. Before we get into today's show, here's some exciting news for all ACB radio listeners. You now can listen to this and other ACB radio programs anytime on the telephone. Just dial 231-460-1047 and follow the instructions to listen to any ACB radio station. It's easy, and most of all, allows you to connect from anywhere there is a phone connection. Now back to today's Speaking Out for the Blind show. Today's guest is Maria Federici Doyle. Sleebrish says that Maria is a young woman whose life changed in February 2004. Maria was driving home when unsecured furniture fell off a trailer and broke apart. A large piece of particle board catapulted through Maria's windshield. The particle board piece hit Maria in the head and caused complete blindness. She also suffered massive brain and facial injuries. But Maria survived the accident and rebuilt her life by taking on life's most challenging obstacles and overcoming them. KVEO-TV in Brownsville, Texas, reports that by overcoming her obstacles, Maria returned for a short time to the job she loves, bartending. Maria also talks about her life before and after the accident in her new book titled, Obstacles Bring 'Em. Maria joins us to talk about her life as a blind bartender and successful book author. Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind, Maria.
Thank you.
Let's first talk about your life before the accident. It's covered in your new book. You were a young child and you did many activities like other children. You played the video games, Super Mario Brothers and Tetris. You fished and you clam digged with your grandparents. And you spent those wonderful summers and Christmases in Hawaii, California, and even Alaska. Tell me about these activities and these cherished memories you have.
Well, anytime I went on vacation to Alaska, Hawaii, Arizona, it was usually to visit my dad because he didn't like to live in the same state for very long, I guess. And so that was really fun. I got to experience a lot of different parts of the country. It was nice. I feel like I learned a lot from doing that. And then also doing the fishing and clam digging with my grandparents and doing all that, it was just, I don't know. That was just, for me, I just thought every kid did that. I just thought it was fun, and that's what kids did.
There was one really fun thing you got to do. This was a big event in your childhood. Your grandfather, he worked at a bank, and he put on this special event for you and the other grandchildren called the $20 thing. What was the $20 thing, and why was it so special?
Well, I think this is what got me started on addition and, you know, math. I started learning math from the $20 thing. And what that was is he would take me and my cousin to a store and say, you each get $20. Now you figure out what you want to buy here that will spend just the $20. It won't go over the $20. So it taught me math at a young age. And it was really fun, and I really had to pick the right toy. I really was focused. But it was fun.
Sure. You also worked hard, too. You went to elementary, middle, and high school, yep. And you did extracurricular activities. One of those activities was music. Why did you choose music, and did you play an instrument, or did you sing?
Well, when I was in elementary school, I did have a babysitter for a while, and I took piano lessons, and that was fun, but it wasn't quite my thing. Then in middle school, I was in choir, and I just enjoyed that. It didn't feel like a regular classroom activity. You know, it wasn't like science class or English class. There was just something that was more fun and relaxing about singing.
Then you went on to college. You got your bachelor's degree in speech communication. Where did you go to school? And tell me about that experience.
I went to the University of Washington, and I think, I'm not sure. Well, I know I picked it because in my family there's only one college to go to, and that would be UW, University of Washington. So I went there, and I wasn't sure what my major would be. I didn't know going in, oh, I'm going to focus on this. But I took a few classes, and I realized that speech communication was something that I just was fond of. So I ended up majoring in that, and I don't know, college was, took 4 years. Wasn't the most exciting thing in the world, but I did enjoy it, and I worked through college as well just to be able to pay for it.
You were going to pursue a master's degree. You had all the papers ready to be sent out, and then you didn't go for the master's. Why?
Well, after my accident happened, my family told me when they went into my apartment to start cleaning it out, they found the paperwork that I was, getting ready to submit to get into the master's program. So I was right there, ready to, send that off. But then the accident happened, so things kind of changed a little bit.
We're going to get into the accident in a little bit. Your first experience working as a bartender was when you went for your bachelor's, and you had to become a bartender to pay the tuition. How did you get trained for that first bartending job?
Well, I applied at a bar, I filled out an application, and I just worked at the front desk to start off. And it was a billiards place, so we had, assigned someone to a pool table, and that was what we did at the front desk. Nothing too tough. And then after doing that for a few months, I moved into being a cocktail server. So you start to learn more about drinks, and you watch the bartenders pour them. And then after a few months of that, I moved into bartending there, and it was, it paid the bills, and it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Did you ever attend bartending school? Because I've heard of a lot of people who've gone to bartending school first, and then they become a bartender.
And I just took got the certification or license to pour legally in the state, but that was it. And I feel like I didn't need to really go to a bartending school because I had already worked there for probably, I guess it was about a year, being, the front desk and then a server, so I had seen enough of it from the other bartenders. I had watched them pour drinks, 4 nights a week for about a year, so I didn't really need to go to a school for it.
Since the car accident in 2004, I mentioned this earlier on the show, you had this long road of recovery involving just a number of surgeries. Tell me about those surgeries.
Well, I don't have any recollection of the first few because, they had me in an induced coma. They had me drugged like crazy, and I was kind of a vegetable in the bed. But I'm told about those. And, they're in my medical records. My husband's, read it to me before. But those first few surgeries were the clean-out surgery to remove all the glass and bits of particle board and all this stuff. It was and a lot of bone because the bone was crushed. So I had a clean-out surgery and then a couple reconstructive surgeries. And then ever since then, it seems like every 6 to 8 to 10 months, something else crops up and I have to deal with it and get another surgery. It's just kind of never-ending, but okay.
Yeah, yes. You're blind, and I'm sure you had to have some orientation mobility training, independent living skills training, all that good stuff, correct?
Well, I, luckily, when I got out of the hospital, my mom had me live with her again for a while. Luckily, I remembered what her house looked like, so I could get around it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helped me initially move around better because I could picture in my head, you know, the kitchen, the bathroom, the TV room. I could, that helped me a bit. And then it helped me go to places that I knew before as well. Because I just could picture them in my head, like I said. I think I might have had mobility training once. And I was just like, I don't like this. I'm just going to do it on my own when I can, when I want to. And so it took a while. But then when I decided I wanted to do it, then I did.
Wow.
I didn't take the, I guess, the classic approach. I just kind of did it my way.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Because I saw you in one of your news stories on one of the Seattle television stations, King 5, that I saw you actually walking around your house with a cane in your hand, a white cane. That's why I wanted to ask you, because this is Speaking Out for the Blind. You know, of course, I'm interviewing blind people like you, and, you know, we want to get to know your blindness a little more and, of course, how you overcame it all. So after the car accident in 2004, you went back to bartending for a short time. Why did you not give up on bartending?
Well, it was back in, I think, 2010. I just, my husband and I, you know, if we go out to dinner and maybe have a beverage, I hear the bartenders behind the bar, you know, you hear the clink, clink of the glasses, and I'm thinking, gosh, I remember that. Yeah, I remember being back there and how it was. And then I just thought to myself, I wonder if it would still feel the same. If I was, you know, pouring, and it would still feel the same, I would think it would, but I don't know. And so I just talked to my husband about it. He's like, I don't know. Why don't you ask someone if you can try it? And so I did, and she's like, sure. Come on over and get behind the bar, and we'll try it. And I did. It was really nice. It was fun, and yep, it still felt the same.
Oh, great. Yeah, you did talk to bar owner Rita Dixon at the Bridge restaurant and bar that she had just opened in West Seattle. Tell me about that restaurant.
Well, it was a previously another bar that my husband and I had gone to for karaoke in the evening, and so I kind of knew the layout of it a little bit, and it was, you know, she had opened it. And we went there, enjoyed the food, enjoyed, you know, the kind of clientele, and I just thought, I think this would be a fun place to try it. Might as well give it a shot, and I did.
So you worked behind the bar with Rita Dixon for a few hours on a voluntary basis for a couple Mondays. I was looking at one of the news stories on you on News10.net. They're the ABC television station in Sacramento. You quickly memorized the soda gun and the location of each bottle and your special corner of the bar.
Yeah.
How did you use the soda gun as a blind person and each bottle to mix the drink for the customers?
Well, I guess because I had, you know, because I had worked in a bar before when I could see it, I just kind of would hold the soda gun in my left hand, and in my right hand, the liquor bottle, and just make sure that I would touch the, obviously fill the glass up with ice first, set it down, and then just, I guess what I did was I just pictured it in my head, and I don't know exactly how, but I just felt the glass and put the bottle, you know, the pour spout of the bottle to it, and poured the shot, which is not hard to pour. It's not like you have to measure it. You just count out in your head. And there's your shot. And okay. I'm not exactly sure how I did it, but it just felt natural because I'd done it before.
You mentioned in the news story that each bottle has its own feel. Explain that to me.
Just about. I mean, different brands, you know, are different shapes. So the Kettle One vodka feels different from the Grey Goose bottle. The bottles, they just feel different. You and I had seen them so much before, it was just in my head how they looked, so I could, I guess, feel it with my hands. And I guess I just see with my hands now, you know? I guess that's how I would say it. So they all feel a little different, and so you touch it, and then you visualize it in your head. And you're like, oh, okay, that's the Maker's Mark bottle. Got it, okay.
You ever think you're going to ever go back to bartending?
Probably not. I tried it, and it was nice, but it was just something I wanted to try, see if I could still do it, and I could. And it was like, okay, I'll probably find something else to do, that I, you know, something else that I want to try.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, but it wasn't anything I needed to stick with.
So let's talk more about your new book, Maria, Obstacles Bring It. How did you decide to write the book? What was the inspiration?
Well, locally, I'd been interviewed so often. And when I go out, my husband and I are even grocery shopping, people would come up to me and ask how I'm doing and ask about this and ask about that because they'd seen me on TV so much. And it kind of was screaming to me, you should write a book. Because people keep asking me about all these things. They're curious. So it just felt right.
So you wrote the book about your life. You went from your childhood till up to just recently. I mean, how did you take the time to write the chapters, you know, go see an editor about it, find a publisher? How were you able to do the whole process?
Well, my husband and I had bought one of those little digital voice recorders, you know. We ended up making a friend a couple of years before I even started or thought about writing the book. And his name was Joseph, and we met him in the, you know, same town we live in. So we became friends, and we found out, yeah, he's an engineer, he's a really smart guy. Oh, he's good at writing too, huh? So we put it together, and he was my ghostwriter. Basically, I talked, he recorded it, and then, you know, printed it up or typed it up and did interviews with people for the book as well that have different chapters, and he just recorded them, and that's how we went about it. He ran it all through me, read it to me several times. And then we went, after we did that, I have an entertainment attorney, so everything could, you know, be legal and done correctly. That, I would say, is very important. And we decided and learned from other people that the standard publishing route just isn't the same anymore. So we were told by several people, you know, self-publishing is a good way to go. And so we did it. Just submitted my manuscript and went from there.
How many copies of the book have been sold?
I'm not sure. Yeah, we haven't got, let's see, I did my book release party in September. And so we only have received from the self-publishing company a report through the third quarter, which is just the end of September. So we haven't received the fourth quarter report yet, but I will say they called about a week after I did my last interview, which was with a local TV show called Evening Magazine, and it was about my book interview. And once that aired, a few days to a week later, the self-publisher, Ex Libris, called, and my husband answered the phone. And they were wondering, why is there this big spike in sales? So we know, you know, after the TV show about my, after they aired that interview with me about the book, that it, yeah, it helped it out. So that was good.
Yes.
And, don't know the exact numbers yet.
That's okay. You know, yeah. I'm just curious. And
yeah.
Because it sounds like you're, you know, I want to give sort of the audience just a little preview about your book and show that it's doing well, and maybe after this interview plays, some of our listeners will go buy it too. In fact, our listeners, that Ex Libris site, exlibris.com is one place where they can buy your book. They can also go to the classic Amazon.com.
A lot of people just keep that app on their phone. When people that my husband and I have talked to, they're like, oh, we want to get your book. Where can we get it? And we're like, well, Amazon.com. And, you know, then their thumb goes wild for about 2 minutes, and they're like, okay, it's ordered.
And then there's BarnesandNoble.com.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Borders.com is still up and running. And they got this book for sale, even though all their bookstores are closed.
Exactly.
Amazing. So our listeners can buy your book at all those sites, correct?
Yes, and it comes, you know, in print, or it comes, you can get an e-book, too.
Okay.
You can buy the e-book version as well. You can download it and listen to it if you want.
What are your plans for the future, Maria?
I like it when my husband and I get out and experience new things. So I do want to travel some more. And I will say traveling, since I've become blind, is different. You know, I used to go places and you're just looking around, right? Now I get a sense of, when we're on vacation, I get a sense of wherever we are, whether it's out of state or out of the country, because I'm just busy listening to things and listening to people and their accents and different stuff like that.
So if our listeners ever want to get into bartending, even get into communication or give speeches, what should they do?
Well, talk to the local colleges, and they have, you know, disabled services usually, so they can help guide you, so you know, well, what could I focus on? How could, you know, I get any assistance with education? When you're curious about something, you just need to go and find the college or the school, and you just ask the questions about what you're interested in and how they could help you. It's really just the best way, I think.
Well then, Maria, we wish you your continued success in life. You're an inspiration to us all. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Before we go, let me give listeners a quick reminder. I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode, or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speaking Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.